Wherever you are in the world, thank you for tuning in to this episode of The Badminton Podcast, a community for badminton players by badminton players, proudly brought to you by Velan. We talk all things badminton and aim to inspire you to be better in your game and in life by celebrating the people and stories of our global badminton community, whether they be past or present professional players, social players, officials or fans.
We're your hosts, Jeff and Henry, and we love badminton. From the bottom of our hearts, we'd just like to say thank you to everyone who has listened to, shared, and been part of the podcast. It wouldn't be possible without you all. If you do enjoy our episodes and can spare just a couple of dollars each month, you can really help keep the podcast going by supporting us on Patreon. Just visit www.patreon.com/thebadmintonpodcast. We'll leave the link in the description. The Badminton Podcast is brought to you by Velant. Henry and I founded Velant out of our own frustration with the confusing, bright, and unsightly clothes we saw in badminton all over the world. But now, it's so much bigger than that. Our mission is to simplify the badminton journey and show the world how incredible badminton is. So make sure you check out our badminton basics at velantwear.com and follow us on our socials at velantwear.
So before we begin, we would like to give a shout out to Nathan Tang, our guest on episode 63, because he became an all-access patron. So thanks for helping to keep the podcast running, Nathan. Now, our guest today is Alex Lin. For those of you who don't know, he has a social media account called @AlexTV with a Y between the A and the L for those who are searching. He is an ex-provincial badminton champion and national third badminton athlete who transitioned into the entertainment industry where he's toured across China as an MC and opera singer, performing at the Golden Rooster Film Festival, which is essentially like the Oscars of China. Well, these days, he's amassed a following of 630,000 followers on TikTok, 18,000 followers on Instagram, and I'm sure he's got followers somewhere else as well that I don't know about. And now he's also running businesses in real estate, e-commerce, and social media. There's probably plenty more, so let's get started.
I think just my life goal is to be an anime shonen protagonist. You know, when the odds are always against you, but you just overcome. I think that's very inspiring. Sometimes the protagonist is too strong. It's not realistic. Because if it's just a protagonist, it's like their destiny is meant to be number one. Some people's destiny isn't meant to be number one, but they can shape it as much as they can. If there's an opportunity for you, just take it. Don't think too much. Just do first and then regret later. Action is more important than success is one of the quotes I follow by.
Welcome onto the show, Alex.
Thank you so much for having me, Jeff and Henry.
No problem. So Alex, there's a lot to unpack there with just the intro, but as this is the Badminton Podcast, how about we start there? Our first question actually comes from a follower. It's a question that we normally ask, but I'll ask it a little bit differently today. So this comes from the follower called @podcast.kepakbulu.
You have another podcast follower?
Yeah, exactly. They have their own podcast and they follow our podcast.
Cool.
Yeah, they ask a question and the question is, how did you first get exposed to badminton?
Okay, well, I first got exposed to badminton because my dad really likes to play badminton for fun. You know, as a little kid, there's not much to do besides follow your parents around, but I did not like badminton at all. So I just sat on the side and then like I kept running onto the courts and they would shoo me off. I think that's my exposure to badminton. But when I really started getting into badminton, I remember there was this one elementary school like tournament and then I joined it. I didn't really know how to play, but then I beat everyone and I won. And I'm like, huh, I kind of like winning. It's not even the badminton. I kind of like winning. Yeah, that's when I started playing badminton. And I think that answered the question.
Yeah, definitely. So where were you at that point in time and how old were you?
I think it was like grade seven. What is grade seven? 12 or 13? Mm-hmm. So like in elementary school, my last year of elementary school.
Where were you at that time?
So I grew up in Vancouver, Canada. Been here most of my life, yeah.
Sure. Okay. So you started winning and you found that you, maybe you did like the sport of badminton, but you liked the winning part of it more. So from that first elementary school competition where you won the tournament, what did that make you, or what did that motivate you to do within badminton? Did you want to start training? Did you start wanting to win more? What happened from there?
Yeah, of course. This is a long time ago and I kind of have bad memory. I don't think my parents ever forced me to play badminton, but after winning that tournament, I got this like free racket. Okay, so I like winning and I also like free stuff. And then I'm like, I want to start playing badminton. And then what happened? I don't know. Did I get a coach or something? Yeah, I think maybe my dad started teaching me at the beginning. And then after, there was this coach. She was like the world champion for doubles. And then she started training me. And I was really fortunate to train with people who were a lot better than me. After I discovered I really like winning, I also discovered I really don't like losing. That also gave me a lot of motivation to play badminton more and to like really get into it.
Okay, so you decided to do some training and then from there, you ended up being the provincial badminton champion. Was that just through training and just entered some competitions and it happened? Or was that a goal that you set that you strive towards or what happened?
I don't know. I have very big dreams. So when I started playing badminton, I'm like, I want to be the number one in the world, which I am not right now, or I don't think I will be because I stopped playing. But I'm provincial champion. I played for a pretty short time. So I started picking up a racket when I was like 13. And then everyone else starts like when they're five, like the good players. Well, in Canada, it might be different. Yeah. And then I started playing more seriously when I was like maybe 15, 16, and then competing around when I was 17. Yeah, you just play tournaments, right? And then you just get better. Is there another way?
So at that stage, you're like, I want to be the number one in the world. This is what I want to do. Was that one of the stepping stones there? Or did you have that goal? Did you have a goal after provincial champion as well?
Not really. I just kind of do it. And then you just win. And then even when I win, it doesn't really feel like I hit a goal. It's just like, this is what I'm supposed to do.
You were essentially just knocking off one milestone on the world to becoming world champion from the sounds of it.
Yeah. It wasn't really like, I'm going to work hard and win provincial champion. When your goal is to be number one in the world, provincial champion is kind of like not close to that spectrum. So you don't really think about it. You're just doing it.
Yeah. So there's another question from another follower at Jackson Kurtz. And he asks the question, what does it take to be top in Canada? I'm going to extend that a little bit. So you said that you were on your way to becoming world champion and winning provincial champions is essentially just a single step on the way. But in terms of the types of training or sort of mental training that you went through, was there anything that you learned along the way? You sound very confident. At that time, you were wanting to be world champion. Did you have any stumbling blocks along the way that you had to overcome? Or was it just, yep, I'm going to do this. All right, provincial champion, done.
Yeah, I think that's basically how it was. Yep, I'm going to do this. Of course, like there's a lot of training, right? And then I got like very good training opportunities. So I had like a world champion coach and I also got opportunities to train in like with the Chinese provincial teams. And then like when I went to Taiwan, had some good people to train with. So it's like mostly it's just very fortunate to have very good training environments, which is probably the lacking part in Canada, good training environments. Yeah, so I was like, I'm going to do this. There's some people supporting me. Thank you very much. And then we did this.
Awesome. So lots of things fell into place for you, but let's just say someone out there who's listening, who's in Canada, for example, and Jackson asked the question, what do you think it takes to become the top? But let's just say of British Columbia, let's just say it's of Canada and maybe not make it the world at this stage. But based on all the experiences that you've had in badminton and your career and everything like that, if you were going to give someone advice for, so maybe a 15-year-old badminton player who really wants to do well in badminton, what would you tell them?
I think it's important to find good mentors, right? Like anything in life, good mentors that will guide you down the right path and give you the right opportunities and tell you when you're kind of straying off path. Yeah, a good mentor would definitely help you get to where your goals are. But the hardest part is not even finding the mentor. Sometimes it's not finding the mentor. Sometimes it's picking the right mentor. When you're new to badminton, even as a parent, if you're new to badminton and you're bringing your child in, it's hard to choose like which coach, which mentor is going to be best for my child. So I guess it's a mentor, hard work, and also luck.
Okay. And then in your badminton career, I know that things lined up for you and then not everyone has this killer confidence like you have, but did you face any barriers or challenges or setbacks that you can remember? And did you do anything in particular to overcome those? Because I'm sure someone out there listening has had similar kind of barriers and obstacles.
Well, let me first tell you a little bit about myself. Do you guys know Naruto? Do you know the anime Naruto?
Sure. Yep.
Yeah. So my role model growing up was this character in Naruto called Rock Lee. Naruto is like a ninja world, right? And then Rock Lee is the only person without superpowers in that ninja world. And then basically he gets through everything through hard work. That's kind of my role model. So I'm just like, I can do anything, even if other people are more talented than me, if I put in the hard work. In Canada, it's definitely harder for training because first, everything is self-funded. It seems like in Vancouver, people don't really like to train together. Maybe because there's a lack of players. Everyone is just like, you know, I'm not going to show you how I train. And then so everyone trains by themselves with private coaches. That's not very fun, you know. So most of the time in Vancouver, what I really didn't like compared to, because I had the chance to experience training in Asia and that team environment, which really helps you improve. In Vancouver, everything is just by yourself. So I would wake up at 5 a.m. to do footwork by myself, to go running by myself. When I play, there's like, sometimes you can't pay too much for coaches, right? So you just get like a friend to start feeding you birds by yourself. So the biggest obstacle is learning to do everything by yourself. You're not relying on anything else. But I think that's like with everything in life. You gotta be able to overcome challenges with what you got.
Yeah, I agree entirely, Alex. And I kind of stopped paying attention the second you started saying Rock Lee because I was like, oh, Rock Lee, I love Rock Lee. The anime is great. I remember like episode 42 or 43, 40 something, and he takes off his weights and he beats Gaara. Oh, no, I think he loses to Gaara, but thought I had to segue there.
Yeah, I'm super into anime. I used to pretend like I have superpowers and stuff. Gotta be a little psycho sometimes to be this confident.
That's completely fair enough. And it seems like you've sort of become the real life Rock Lee. And certainly not just in ninja fighting or badminton, but in other things as well. But sorry to segue there. Yeah, love the anime as well. I grew up watching quite a lot of it and reading quite a lot of it. So glad to be in the presence of basically real life Rock Lee.
I'm going to interject here and just say, I don't know who Rock Lee is. I know of the anime, but I don't actually follow it. Alex, would you say that, I'm sure lots of listeners actually do know, but would you say that that demeanor that you have and the confidence and the certainty that you have to achieve whatever you work hard on, does that come from somewhere else other than Rock Lee? Does it come, did your parents instill that in you? Do you have any siblings that instilled that in you or a coach or mentor that just started at a young age and just was got you in that mindset?
I think it's mostly from anime, but of course my parents, they do believe in me and support me. They're like, you can do whatever you want. Just put in the work. But it's mostly from anime. I watched a lot of anime.
Fair enough. I presume you don't watch so much anime these days because you've got so much else going on?
I still watch anime. I mean, it's like my motivation.
Yeah. Just Rock Lee on repeat.
Or just like anything. I think just my life goal is to be an anime shonen protagonist. You know, when the odds are always against you, but you just overcome. I think that's very inspiring. Maybe that's the main reason why I watch anime.
Yeah, but you didn't choose the protagonist. You chose Rock Lee.
Yeah, that's true. Sometimes the protagonist is too strong. It's not realistic. Because if it's just the protagonist, it's like their destiny is meant to be number one. Some people's destiny isn't meant to be number one, but they can shape it as much as they can.
Yeah. We'll move on from anime so that our listeners can actually get something out of this podcast, except for us talking about Rock Lee. So this question comes from the same follower as earlier, the podcast follower at podcast Tepak Bulu. Simple question, maybe more challenging, but what is your favorite shot?
Your favorite badminton shot?
Not drinking shot, not alcohol shot.
You can do that as well. You can do that as well.
Badminton shot. Let's go both. I don't know what he's actually asking.
Okay. Do people have favorite badminton shots? Have you asked this question to other athletes?
Yeah, definitely. I've got my favorite.
Really? Wait, so what's your favorite?
My favorite is around the head cross court where I look like I'm playing straight, but then I play cross, half smash cross.
I have never thought of this. What the heck?
Okay. What is your weapon? Like if someone hits it to a certain spot and you know, okay, this is my spot. I know that I can dominate, maybe not win the point on this shot, but I know that I can put myself in a really good position from here.
I would say my weapon is not really like one shot. My weapon is more like I'm really good at predicting shots. So I'm really good at like knowing what they're going to hit and then just getting there a little bit early and then just giving them that psychological scare. I think that's what my weapon is. So for the shot, I don't know. I'm not really good at any shots, you know.
Anticipation then. That anticipation and tactical awareness.
Anticipation, yeah.
And alcohol shot? Just in case he's asking about the shot.
I really like Maotai. Do you guys drink Maotai?
Is it Chinese rice wine or is it?
Yeah, it's the Chinese like 50, 60 degree. It's really good and really expensive.
I can imagine it just burn your throat. I've never tried it, but I've heard good things and it's expensive. I think my dad has a bottle somewhere.
It is expensive. Yeah, I think it's like probably like minimum $500 a bottle. And then its bottles are like 50 ml or something. I don't know, super small.
See, I would think it wouldn't taste like anything. I would think it's just pure alcohol. I haven't tasted it before.
I think it's just like an acquired taste. We're going like really off off topic all the time. Favorite badminton shot is anticipation and favorite shot is a Maltai.
Nice. Well, before we go on to the non-badminton endeavors, which I bet you are dying to start talking about, we have one more question from another follower, Karen_KST. So she asks, is badminton your real passion? Or is it something that your parents sent you to play as a kid?
Well, my parents definitely did not tell me to play badminton. I think my mom was kind of against it because they're like, sports gives you injuries. But is badminton my passion? I think learning new things is definitely my passion. Learning new things and overcoming challenges. And badminton was kind of fun. Badminton is actually a pretty high injury sport now that I think of it. Because if you don't train properly, your body is not proportional. It's like some sides are stronger than others. And you got to weight train. Otherwise, you're going to have a bad back or stuff. But badminton was a good sport to learn because I think it's like good for your health. But it's not too popular in Canada. They make me the coolest kid. Makes me cool now though. Good thing I'm in like Chinese, like Vancouver, which is a lot of Chinese people. So it's a little bit more respected.
I think Henry can resonate with those back injuries as well.
You have back injuries? I think like if I sit for long periods of time, my back like starts to hurt.
Because of lockdown, we only started playing very recently. And last week we went to a new sort of badminton stadium to help out with some things. And they were doing some recordings and they asked us to do jump smashes. Well, I don't jump smash, first of all. Part one and part two was that I hadn't been playing for a very long time and most of what I've been doing in lockdown was just sitting and working. So I did my back last week. I do it quite frequently because this guy on the other square in this call decided to play box. Do you know what box is?
Box game?
We call it Matches Canadian as well, but anyway.
What? Matches Canadian?
Yeah, just like a fun game that we play. It's called Canadian on the court.
Oh, okay. Yeah, you pulled your back playing the box game?
No. I pulled my back doing the jump smash, but I think playing the box game made it worse.
Sorry, Henry.
You were playing with each other, right?
Yeah.
That's not good.
Not fun at all. Don't recommend it unless you've been training quite consistently. Anyway, Alex, let's move on instead of talking about my back problems. So, in terms of badminton, like how has badminton allowed you to achieve great success like that you've had in multiple avenues, right? Because you've moved on from badminton now, you've moved into other things, but has badminton given you anything or taught you anything that you've been able to apply to other areas of your life?
Yeah, so I actually did a lot of stuff before badminton, like swimming and piano and like speeches, but badminton was the first thing that I did that really taught me how to want something and then how to achieve it. And then it's really changed my lifestyle because like who wakes up at 5 a.m. every day? Like I still try my best. Okay, I wake up a little later now at like 7. Badminton has instilled this lifestyle into me of like using every minute of my life as much as I can. So sometimes maybe I'll sleep at like 3 a.m., but I'll still wake up at like 7, which is like kind of every day right now. Yeah, it definitely gave me a lot of mental ways to succeed. It's just identify what you want. Identify what the obstacles are blocking you and then look around, maybe on the internet for people on how to overcome those obstacles. Even for simple things, like if you're trying to hit a shot, you just have to identify what you're not doing correctly and then look around to what is correct. And then you just problem solve. I think that's where we got off at. Hard work, I think mostly, and problem solving ability is what badminton taught me to help me do other things in my life.
And I guess that problem solving, that element of finding someone that can help you, because you said you go on the internet, you find someone who's overcome that obstacle, you get a coach that knows what the technique is, and then you get the right advice from the start. You just don't make it up as you go.
And also, I think it's important to not only find coaches who are really good, but it's important to find people who are just slightly better than you for advice. Because sometimes, even though I'm doing like a little bit of coaching now, if I were to coach a beginner, it's been so long ago that I kind of don't remember what it's like. So sometimes it's good to get very professional advice and advice that's just slightly higher than where you are because it's more recent for them and they can kind of relate when they're giving you that advice. It's not like coaches like, that's easy, just hit it harder. Yeah.
Okay, so Alex, from an outside of badminton perspective, look, you're doing emceeing, opera singing. You have so many other things that you're doing. Can you tell us a little bit about those things?
I think I do so many things. The thing is, like, I get bored really easily. So I have to, like, always keep myself excited with trying new things. So I'm always doing new things. So what have I done? I've done, like, emceeing. I've done, like, rap competition. I've done just normal singing, piano. I think I played flute before. Right now, I'm learning violin and I'm playing guitar. What did I say? I did opera singing? I don't remember.
Can I put you on the spot and ask you to do a badminton rap?
Wait, I'm not actually good at rapping because I only did one rap competition and it was for the rap. Do you know the Rap of China? It's like The Voice, but a rap show in China. And then I auditioned for the Vancouver and I was a Vancouver finalist. But for the rap, I wasn't really good at rapping because I added in like really bad dancing and I sang a bit of opera in it. It was just so original that the judges were so shocked and they're like, So I'm actually not good at rapping.
So do you remember how you auditioned then? What does rap mixed with opera sound like?
It sounds pretty funny. It sounds like I'm speaking in an opera tone, but I'm speaking it really fast. That's basically it.
Okay.
Any room for a sneak preview?
No, it's way too cringe. No, I can't. That part of my life is gone. But how I entered that rap competition is pretty funny. It was like one time I wanted to jam with my friend. And then I'm just like, you know, let's just jam. And then she said, I can. I got a rap competition. I'm like, wait, what rap competition? Maybe I should jam. She's like, there's no way you can rap. I'm like, huh, you just watch. And then so I just joined.
What did you rap about?
It was my first time rapping. I'm not used to writing lyrics or anything. So I took in China we have like lang song. Do you know what lang song is? It's like Chinese poetry. So I took Chinese poetry and I turned it into a rap. So it's probably about like something about coming from the earth and then God intervention. I don't know.
Sounds pretty like hip hop. Yeah. Like instead of coming from the hood, it's nice. Listeners, you're probably going to have to wait till we speak to Alex again before he musters up the courage to give us a sneak peek, unless he suddenly found it.
No, it's going to be after. Yeah, I don't think it's coming back. Maybe we'll do some opera rap releases in the future. That sounds pretty fun. But I'm working on like some music too right now, which is like opera EDM. I always like trying new stuff.
Nice. So how did you get into opera?
Well, first I started singing. So I did some like singing competitions. And then I'm just like, wow, it's so hard to stand out. Because what I really like to do is performing. And then if you want to perform, you need an audience. Well, you don't need it, but it's nice to have one. I did so many singing competitions. Like so many people are good. Also through like learning classical piano, I play piano since I was 4. I realized that modern music compared to classical music, there's a very defined way of what's good. Like this is good and this is not good. Modern music is like, oh, that's pretty good. Ah, that's pretty good. Like everything's good. So how do you be like the best? Once I did a little bit of singing, I'm like, everyone's good. How do I be better? Maybe I need to try something else. Maybe I need to go into something that will make me stand out more and can be a little bit more defined. In classical music and opera, you know when someone's good. Like you have to do things a very certain way. And that's kind of how I got into opera. I feel like classical music has a slight elitism in it. It's like once you start classical music, it's hard to go back to that other stuff. So once I started opera, I was just like, huh, this other singing is not as good. The music's good, but the singing is not as good. So I'm just kind of like in opera now. I can't get out.
You can't stoop to down to those levels, right?
It's just because like classical music, there's so much more history and technique. Actually, everything's different. I don't know. But opera is, it feels like when you sing, it just makes you feel good. When you sing pop a lot with incorrect technique, it feels tired. And I don't like to feel tired.
How's your vibrato?
Very good.
Nice, nice. When you decided to make that transition to opera, was there anyone telling you, hey, your voice will never be good for opera? You can't do that. Was there anyone like that?
That's like everyone at everything I do in my life. That's why I do it. I get the satisfaction when they tell me no, and then I can do it. This is kind of like my weakness. If you say I can't do something, I'll like do it, even if it's like a waste of my time.
You can't rap on this podcast, Alex. You cannot rap on this podcast. I bet you cannot.
Oh, you just wait. I'm going to drop a rap opera song soon for you guys, but not here.
So Alex, you said that you were doing speaking as well, and I guess that led into emceeing. So you've been doing all your emceeing. What is it for? Is it for weddings? Is it for award ceremonies? Is it, what are you doing there?
So I emceed like film festivals. I emceed weddings, not as much. I emceed a lot of performance events in China too. A lot of mostly on stage stuff, very few weddings. How I got into emceeing is actually through singing opera. So before, my voice wasn't always like this. Before, my voice was kind of like more nasally. So yeah, speaking. But through like opera, I made it, start to make it more resonant. And then people were like, huh, your voice is okay. You want to try doing some emceeing? I'm like, huh, yes, I do. And then that's how we got into emceeing.
I didn't know that like learning to sing or becoming better at singing can help with your speaking voice. But now I know. I should probably take up some opera. We'll see. We'll see. So, Alex, you're working on a number of things and you're probably constantly learning new things and working on new things as well. So can you tell us something we don't know yet, something we haven't spoken about in this podcast, in the introduction? What are you secretly working on?
I don't think I'm secretly working on anything. Nothing's a secret. I'm pretty open because like it's kind of different from how other people try to present themselves. And I'm often told this. People often tell me I should present myself when I'm ready. But what I like to do is like my goal is to inspire people to pursue their passion. So it's really important that you show them the process. Because I remember growing up when I used to be good at a few things, people are just like, ah, this guy is like, if I'm good at singing, it's like, this guy's born with a nice voice. Or this guy, you know, he's just really good at this. They don't know like how much work has been put into it. So I don't have anything that's secret. I really like to show them from scratch how bad I am. But I'm not scared to show how bad I am because I know that I will be good.
All out on the table. Does that give you a sense of accountability as well? Like when you present it and you're like, I've said I'm doing it, I better get good at this.
Yeah, of course. I feel like accountability is actually super important to success. And I guess this is my way of being accountable because once you tell it to like 600,000 people, you kind of got to do it.
They'll be commenting and saying, where's the next video of it, right?
Yeah. Also like having people, even like fans who support you. You know, I used to think before people who say like, oh, I'm so grateful for fans and stuff, like that's just things they say to have that like idol appearance or something. But now like I actually have some fans supporting me. It actually makes a really big difference. Just having those people support you. Those people are actually my motivation to do things. So accountability, very important. Yeah.
So look, emceeing, opera singing, previously doing rap, involved in motorsports and real estate. Can you let us in on any more of your projects?
Right. Yeah. I really like motorcycling because at first it was kind of hard, but now it's like, if I want to get better, I need to do races, but that may result in injury. I don't know if it's worth it. I'll think about it. And then my like businesses, real estate, e-commerce, social media. Well, real estate was like, when I was graduating high school, like I said, it's important to find really good mentors. And I was brainstorming. I'm like, how do I find successful people that can become my mentors? And then first of all, I had to define what successful people mean. I guess I somehow defined it in entrepreneurship. So I'm like, real estate, especially in Vancouver. Vancouver is like a place where moguls gather. Everyone has real estate in Vancouver. And then I'm like, huh, maybe real estate is the way for me to get to know these mentors and then so I can learn more. So real estate was like that. Mostly I'm on a path of learning. E-commerce, I'm working together with some people on a doggy raincoat clothing line. I really like dogs and just most of my life, I think, is just luck. When opportunities arise, you just take it. Yeah.
So speaking of doggy apparel, I do have a bit of an animal background myself. Oh,
what does that mean? Oh, you're a vet.
Yeah, that's what people tell me in the past. I'm no longer practicing clinically anymore, but I saw corgiology and I was quite interested because I looked on your socials and I couldn't find a corgi anywhere. So why corgiology?
So we actually started out in China and in Chinese it's called Keshizui. So it's just kind of been a translation of that to corgiology. And actually, you know what? I don't have a good explanation of this. It was just a translation. Yeah. And that's what it became. And that's what it is.
That's absolutely fair enough. I was just curious. Was there some sort of deeper meaning behind the corgi? I'm like, where is this corgi? There must be this corgi somewhere on Alex.
So I didn't come up with this name, but I think the explanation was back then, Socrates, like something admired a corgi or something. Something about that. Yeah, who knows? But it's mostly just from the Chinese name.
Yeah. So Alex, you're doing so many things. And I guess one of your weaknesses is potentially taking on a lot of things that maybe you don't have time for, or just because you want to not just prove someone wrong, but maybe prove to yourself that you can do something that maybe someone said that they couldn't. And then you also talk about luck and say you had lots of badminton coaches, you had academies or training groups, and then you had opportunities when you found mentors in real estate. Of course, you help create those opportunities by being there to receive them. But how do you make your decisions based on those opportunities? Because I guess everyone is presented with some opportunities at some point in their life, and sometimes they take it, sometimes they don't. And I've heard something where, especially if you're a bit time poor, as in you've got lots of things going on, then it's either an F yes or an absolute no. There's no in between it. It's just, oh, maybe. It's F yes or no. That they're the two options. I won't say the F word just because there might be some younger people listening. But do you use a similar kind of philosophy, or how do you make decisions?
How do I make decisions? I think it's just like, do I want to do this? I don't really use logic. I'm just like, do I want to do this? No, I don't. Okay, we're not going to do this. I want to do this? Yeah, I do. Maybe I'll do it for a bit. And I'm like, huh, do I still want to do this? Nah, I don't want to do this anymore. Or maybe it'll be like, no, I don't want to do this. Wait, but I kind of want to do this now. It's just whatever I want to do. Yeah. It's probably not the most efficient way, but I think it's a way to keep yourself more happy instead of doing a bunch of things you don't want to do.
Okay. Yeah. You are taking opportunities as they come and things are changing. Do you have any 5-year vision or 10-year? Where would you like to be? Would you like to be doing?
Of course I have a 5, but sometimes you got to keep your goals a secret. When I talk to someone, I'd rather learn something from them than have them tell me why my goal is not realistic. I feel like just as a consequence of what you want when you're talking to someone, I prefer not to use my time having them tell me why my goal is not realistic. That's where kind of like this mindset, just watch me do it and then we can talk about something else. We can talk about something in the moment.
Yeah, cool. I guess we'll have to wait for 5 years to know what Alex's vision is. So we'll check back in 5 years, Alex, and we'll see where you're
at. Now we're checking 5 months and just see if the badminton wrap is ready.
All right.
Cool. So Alex, we're coming towards the end of this podcast. We're having a lot of fun here. We do have a couple of questions from some other followers. This one comes from @GaoYoungAn_in-between. And they ask if you are a food lover. And if you are a food lover, what is your favorite food?
Okay, first of all, I don't have a favorite food, but I'm going to tell you, I love food so much that I eat when I'm full. And that's why I'm like gaining so much weight right now. It's like we were born to eat, no? How do some people just like eat like, oh, I eat to not be hungry? What the heck? You're missing out on so much in life. Food is like pretty good. It's pretty good. Food is amazing. How could they ask that question? Are they not into food?
I think they might be in food, but they just want to know if you are and what your... Okay, do you have a favorite cuisine or is it just everything as well?
I do not, because I love food so much. I like to eat everything. Like if you put food in front of me while I'm full, I will eat it. It's a bad habit. It's like sometimes like actually get into coma, like I can't move and I'll start coughing, but it was worth it because I love food.
@Gao_Young_An also asks, do you have any siblings?
I do not have any siblings. Can you imagine if I had siblings and all of us were like super confident? That's like, I don't know. Is that possible? People often tell me I give off a lot of only child vibes. Do you think so?
I don't know. I know several only childs and everyone's got different personalities.
So. Yeah.
Yeah. Confident, know what you want to do, want to prove other people wrong.
Okay, let's not say, but want to prove other people wrong. I want to inspire other people by showing them that I can do something that maybe they think they can't do themselves.
I think we got to get into opera singing, Henry.
Yeah.
I got to get a deeper voice for sure. That nighttime radio voice that Alex has.
Welcome to the Badminton Podcast. This is Henry and Jeff presenting Alex TV.
Okay, I like that. Let's get Alex to record our introduction.
And I have some opera in there as well. Okay, so we've had a really good chat today. We've gone on lots of different tangents and probably my favorite tangent is anime one. Like I want to find out where all this inspiration comes from. What have I been missing out on my whole life in terms of overcoming obstacles? Do you follow any other animes that have such a significant impact?
I watch a lot of animes, but I think Naruto had the biggest impact because I was little and it just kind of cemented in me. Japanese write animes because like it also motivates their people to work. So animes are kind of created in a certain way to produce their ideal society of hard workers. So I think that's pretty cool.
Okay. Is there anything else that we haven't asked you that you thought, I really wanted to talk about this on the podcast?
I have no clue. I have really bad memory. If you don't remind me that I know how to do something, I will forget that I know how to do it.
Do you know where you are right now, Alex? We're on the badminton podcast, by the way.
Oh, shoot. I thought we were on the... Yeah, never mind.
You even forgot what you were going to say.
I think that's a downside of sleeping like 4 hours every day.
We'll leave the audience with that one. Okay, so listeners try and forget a lot of things and you will be happier. That's probably not necessarily a bad piece of advice, I guess. Great. So, Alex, for listeners out there that do want to follow you along your journey and watch the process, not necessarily the big events, I'm sure the big events will come as well. For those of them that do want to follow you, where can they find you?
They can find me on Instagram, TikTok, and YouTube, all under the same username, AlexTV with a silent Y, AyLexTV.
Awesome. And we'll put that in the podcast description so that you don't get the spelling wrong and you don't follow a normal Alex with no Y. That wouldn't be good. And Alex, lastly, before we bid you farewell and thank you for being on the podcast, we've talked about lots of different things that has helped you in your career, in your life, to get you to where you are now and where you will eventually be. Do you have any additional pieces, like take home pieces of advice or anything that you'd just like to say, okay, this has been really important for me. This is what you should potentially do or consider.
If there's an opportunity for you, like being on the Badminton podcast, sometimes just take it. Don't think too much. Just do first and then regret later. Action is more important than success is one of the quotes I follow by.
And that certainly rings true in our conversation today, Alex. Just from everything you've talked about, that is definitely a motto that I feel that you definitely live by. And sometimes I live by that motto, not all the times, but I do suggest it, not for all occasions, but definitely one.
This motto has definitely got me into a lot of trouble a lot. But yeah.
When you talked about when you were out of high school and you said, what does success look like to you? And that kind of looked at entrepreneurship and that thing. And then you talk about entrepreneurs building a something and building the plane on the way down.
What was that metaphor? Jumping out of the building on a plane down?
Oh no. So if you jump, I think it's you jump off a cliff or jump off a building, but you build the plane on the way down when you're falling. That's the definition of entrepreneurship because it's about action and not building the plane and making everything perfect before you jump off, but jump off, build it on the way down. And if you crash, then that's entrepreneurship.
What?
What if you crash, it's entrepreneurship. You mean if you fly?
Oh no, if you don't build it in time before you land on the ground, then you have to move on to the next thing.
Okay, I love that. I'm going to remember this one. I like this one. Holy, Jeff, that was a good one. I'm going to start using this from now on.
Okay, make sure you credit whoever said it.
I think it's like in Eric Ries Lean.
It's going to be the Badminton podcast because that's where I first heard
yes.
it.
Yes.
Do that, yeah. Jeff Toe from the Badminton podcast.
All right, Alex, perfect. Thank you so much for joining the podcast. We got lots of awesome advice and hopefully people who are listening out there really take action and follow some Naruto. I actually want to start watching that just so I can get some motivation. But thanks again for coming on.
Thank you guys so much for having me.
So from Henry and I at the Badminton Podcast, thanks for tuning in to this episode. If you've enjoyed it or found it useful, be sure to share it with your family, friends, teammates, and someone outside your badminton circle too, because with your help, we can show the world how incredible badminton is.
To keep up to date with new episodes and who we're interviewing next, make sure you connect with us on Instagram, Facebook, and LinkedIn at the Badminton Podcast, and on Twitter at the Badminton Pod. Feel free to contact us and ask any questions, give us feedback, or request topics for future episodes. We love hearing from you. And remember to check out and shop for your simple and minimalist badminton gear at volantwear.com. Catch you on the next episode.
Bye. Bye.